This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The trade and tariff dispute between the U.S., China, Europe, Canada, and other nations now involves more than 10,000 products around the globe. It began in January when the Trump administration set new import tariffs on Chinese solar panels and washing machines. Then the U.S. raised tariffs on steel and aluminum imports. China retaliated with tariffs on U.S. goods from soybeans to seafood. Canada, the EU, and Mexico set their own tariffs on U.S. imports. At this point, China has imposed tariffs on about $45 billion worth of American goods. The U.S. is taxing $50 billion worth, proposing tariffs on a total of $200 billion of Chinese products, and President Trump said he's willing to go even further. This trade war is growing, but all wars have casualties and a few profiteers. Who's getting hurt in this war? Who's adapting? And who's thriving? Joining us in studio to discuss it is Sean Donnan, World Trade Editor for the Financial Times and a frequent flyer of the Friday News Roundup. Sean, welcome back to 1A.
Nice to see you.
Also joining us in studio is Chad Bown, a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He's co-host of the weekly podcast Trade Talks about the economics of trade policy. Chad, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us from Michigan is Brian DeHenno, president of BCD Construction, which is a licensed building company in the Detroit area. Brian, welcome.
Great to be here, Josh.
We also welcome your questions and thoughts about trade and this trade war, particularly if you are a business owner who is affected by any of these new tariffs, or just if you have questions about what all this is and what it means for you. Email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Sean Donnan, let me start with you. Part of what we should bear in mind is that this was a campaign promise. Donald Trump said that we have an unfair trade imbalance with other nations, China, and much of the rest of the world. The Trump administration imposed these tariffs. Things escalated. What's your view on how we kind of got to this point? I laid out some of the bullet points, but is this just the fulfillment of a campaign promise? Is there more to it than that?
Yeah, so I think there's two things. One is, yes, this is absolutely the fulfillment of a campaign promise. What we're seeing today should be no surprise to anyone who was paying attention in 2016. Trade, rewriting the way America deals with its trading partners was part of Donald Trump's promise as he was running for president. It was one of his main economic messages. I'm here to kind of stop the carnage, as he called it in his inaugural address. And in his inaugural address, he talked about a new era of protection in America, which a lot of us said, well, here we go. This is a new protectionist America that's coming. And here we are today. We're seeing that. 18 months into the Donald Trump presidency, he's delivering on that political promise. The second thing is there is a kind of bipartisan consensus in America today that it hasn't worked. That globalization has had unintended consequences, that some people in the Rust Belt and in other parts of the country have been hurt by globalization, by jobs going offshore, whether it's to Mexico or China. And secondly, that also this relationship between the U.S. and China, the economic relationship, these are the world's two largest economies, hasn't quite worked out the way that President Clinton, George W. Bush envisioned when China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001 and was kind of brought into the community of free trading nations, and that it's taken a lot of advantage of the United States, and that Donald Trump is right in diagnosing the problem in some way. The big question now is how you deliver and how you respond to that problem. So I think people agree on the diagnosis. People don't agree on what he is doing.
Let's get a little bit more, Chad Bown, into what the president is doing. It's worth noting that not all the tariffs that have been threatened have gone into effect. Can you just give us a broad snapshot of what the big tariffs are that we should keep an eye on that are in effect and the ones that are maybe threatened? Let's split this into two pieces just to make it easier to keep in our heads. First of all, the big tariffs that are in effect right now, what would you say are the few that people should keep in mind?
Okay. I would say there's basically three. So back in March and then extended in June, the president imposed sweeping tariffs basically covering the steel and aluminum industry. So key inputs that are used to make a lot of stuff, whether you're talking about automobiles, roads, bridges, refrigerators, you know, steel, aluminum, lots and lots of different things. Those went on everybody. Those have already been imposed. On July 6th, President Trump imposed tariffs on $34 billion worth of imports from China. That was primarily a lot of things that you or I wouldn't have any idea what these things are. There are a lot of parts and components, intermediate inputs that are part of supply chains that companies buy in the United States, assemble into other goods and services to sell in the United States or to sell around the world. It's what makes American companies competitive. Those tariffs are already on. And then in response to that, as you mentioned at the top, trading partners have retaliated with their own tariffs. Basically, one for one, all of these tariffs that the United States has imposed, Europe, Canada, Mexico, China, all of our major trading partners have responded in kind. Now, what they're retaliating over is quite different. They're hitting a lot of consumer goods, brand name items that the United States would export, Harley Davidson or orange juice, peanut butter, or in the case of China, major agricultural products, soybean, pork, beef, fruits, nuts, these kinds of things. Those are the ones that are on.
So the big three to keep in mind that are in effect are steel and aluminum, Chinese imports of parts and components, things that are kind of made into other things,
yep,
and then these one-for-one tariffs with our trading partners of brand name consumer goods. What are some of the big ones, Chad, that we should keep an eye on that might take effect but are not in effect yet?
Okay. And those are the really, really big ticket items. So far we've got about, you know, maybe $100 billion, close to that, worth of imports. The ones that are coming up are basically two: automobiles, parts, trucks, potentially $350 billion worth of imports there. And again, most of that comes from trading partners like Europe, Canada, Mexico, Japan, South Korea. That's a lot of money. $350 billion. And the other one is there's another $200 billion on the table of stuff coming in from China. And that first list, or that second list on China, this $200 billion, starts to move beyond some of these intermediate inputs and starts to hit some consumer goods. But then on Friday, President Trump also said as well, he may extend that $200 to basically cover all the imports that we have from China, which would start to then hit iPhones, clothing, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's something President Trump said in an interview that aired on Friday. Here is part of what he said to CNBC's Joe Kernan, referring to his willingness to put tariffs on $500 billion of Chinese imports to the U.S.
I really like President Xi a lot, but it was very unfair. So I raised 50. We're down 500. Now, some people would say 375 billion. I'm not talking about million. I'm not talking about pennies. I'm talking about we're down 375 billion, but other estimates could say 507. It doesn't matter. So it's in between there or it's there. We're down a tremendous amount. I raised 50 and they matched us. I said, you don't match us. You can't match us because otherwise we're always going to be behind
would
the eight
ball. Would you ever get to 500 though?
I'm ready to go to 500.
With the midterms on the horizon, what if the stock market were to go
down? Well, I actually think that's, if it does, it does. Look, I'm not doing this for
20%?
Politics. I'm doing this to do the right thing for our country. We have been ripped off by China for a long time.
Part of what President Trump said in an interview that aired Friday with CNBC's Joe Kernan. Brian DeHeno, I wonder what your view is as a business owner, someone who runs a roofing and construction company, of the president's willingness to keep escalating this trade war dramatically beyond where it is today. I'm guessing that you've already felt the impacts of these tariffs as they stand right now.
Slightly. You know, I'm sitting here with my MAGA hat on and I'm going for unconditional trade war victory. And something that has to strike me is this is an issue that Democrats actually won and got elected on for many decades here in Michigan. And being from the Detroit area, we do feel an impact. My particular business, I'd say the biggest one we deal with right now is lumber. Lumber has gone up, I'd say probably almost double. But in terms of where does that hit my scale, when I show up to work every day, what are my problems that I deal with one by one? Labor is actually a bigger problem than material costs, although they are going up. However, so far so good, we've been able to pass a lot of those costs along. The economy is doing pretty good. So the way I kind of look at this is if we're going to open up a trade war, we kind of pick the right opportune time that the conditions are right for victory if we really want to follow this all the way through.
Those aluminum and steel tariffs, how have those affected your business, Brian?
What aluminum has done, we actually use a little bit more aluminum than steel in residential roofing. Commercial roofing, we use quite a bit more steel. As far as in the course of a roof, there's about $200 worth of flashing and aluminum that goes into the average roof. The average roof costs about $8,000. As a percentage of the cost of input costs into a roof, it's really not that much. Let's say it goes from 200, let's say by the end of the year it even doubles up to $400. It's really not going to impact that much or deter anybody from buying anything from us. It is something to watch, but one of the things that actually is an ancillary benefit to us is at the end of the year, we do take scrap off of a lot of our jobs, and we take dumpsters of it back to the scrap yards, and what we're getting at the scrap yards is almost about double what we got last year.
So you've been finding ways to make some new revenue as a result of all this. And Brian, I do want to ask you a little more about how this is affecting you, particularly what you mean when you say an unconditional trade war victory. I wonder what that would look like for you. Hold that thought. We'll continue with you in just a moment. And I do want to also get to some of the thoughts from some of you listening in on this conversation. Melissa tweeted, "My company, an abrasive diamond producer, announced today that we are part of the people impacted by the tariffs and that the cost of our products will increase and most likely will hit our gains. Therefore, this will affect wages and increases next year." We welcome more of your thoughts about how this trade war is affecting you, and we'll answer more of your questions with Brian DeHenno of BCD Construction in Michigan, Chad Bown of the Peterson Institute of International Economics, and Sean Donnan of the Financial Times. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Are you hunkering down for this trade war? We're answering your questions about what's going on with tariffs and U.S. businesses with Chad Bown of the Peterson Institute for International Economics, Sean Donnan, World Trade Editor at the Financial Times, and Brian DeHenno, President of BCD Construction in the Detroit area. We welcome your questions and thoughts. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org, like Samantha did. Samantha emails, "I work at a pretty small, privately owned company with under 70 employees, 70 employees. We manufacture one particular product. Since the tariffs, we have seen an increase in our cost. We pay more for materials, but we also pay more for shipping, about $500 more per truckload. I worry about how this will affect employees, from bonus checks to reasonable wage increases. We are all just holding our breath." Brian DeHenno, let me come back to you. You mentioned that you were looking forward to an unconditional trade war victory. You got your Make America Great Again hat on, as you said. Describe for me what that victory would look like for you as a business owner and for your employees.
Well, what that would look like for us is, if you look at the world landscape and who we trade with, you have the EU, you have China, and several other partners that we deal with. China alone, we deal with about $636 billion in trade, total trade. About $505 billion of that is in imports. And I thought this number would be higher, but $130 billion in exports. And if you really do the math on it, we're losing somewhere between $300 to $500 billion a year. I think some of that is a little bit off the books because you can't grab your whole head around it. That's not an open market. No matter how you look at it, you look at China, that is not an open market. When GM, Ford and Chrysler are pretty big around here, when they go to China and they try to sell Buicks or they try to sell GMC trucks, a lot of times China will play the political games with that. They will say, well, you can have three dealerships, but only in this region. And we're going to put it right next to a Chinese automaker dealership. They would also do things like import restrictions, and sometimes they'll also play games with on the quotas. So to what I look at is what a victory is, it would be to open up other markets so that we can sell our goods just as easily as they could sell their goods here in the United States in the North American market.
I'm a little confused though, Brian. You're not a manufacturer or an exporter. You have a local construction company. What difference does it make to you locally if GM can open a dealership in Beijing?
The money flows back to us ultimately. In the Detroit area, we are very auto-centric, although we have, over the last 10 years, diversified quite a bit. But if we see a huge downturn in the auto market, say GM were to go through anything like it did in 2009, 2010, those are ultimately my customers.
Gotcha.
Those are the people I buy from, the small businesses, tier one, tier two, and tier three suppliers that we do commercial roofs for. They, you know, they might put those projects off or delay those projects. Sometimes they'll just deal with the leaky roof. If the money's not going to be there and they can't plan ahead, that could definitely be a problem. And eventually that money does flow back to us. And the converse is true too. As things are doing good, as the auto industry is doing good, they had more markets that can bring more revenue. Obviously that allows us more customers to work for.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, but I get the sense that for some of the president's supporters, maybe you, maybe not, but for some of the president's supporters, this is also a point of pride. The idea that another nation could just take advantage of the U.S. when it comes to our goods, our services, our products, especially products that the Chinese have been documented stealing intellectual property from, it just rankles as an American. So I get the feeling that some of the president's supporters just feel it's wrong to mistreat the United States on the world stage. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it's not just a feeling. It's true. It's actually happening. In China, you know, I have a lot of my customers that do a lot of travel in China for business, and they all kind of have the same story. In China, they're very Chinese-centric. There's a one-party system, and everybody somewhat rows in the same direction over there. They have a mission. They've somewhat stated it is their mission that they want China to be a one world China with it by 2025. They've actually made this a mission statement and actually put a goal out and said, put the stakes in the ground and said, this is where we're going to go with this. So essentially, they've opened up the trade war on their end. We just haven't been fighting back.
We're also hearing, I should say, Sean, there are some legitimate concerns among folks in a variety of industries in terms of what China will mean for them, especially in agriculture. We heard from a soybean farmer in Iowa who's concerned about the impact of this trade war. Here's what this farmer left in our inbox.
Hello, this is April Hemis from Hampton, Iowa, north central Iowa, a soybean farmer. I farm approximately 1,000 acres, half corn, half soybeans. Iowa is usually number one or two in soybean production for the nation. We have realized real losses on the farm. The price of soybeans has gone down $2 since the announcement of soybean tariffs, and yet the price in Brazil has stayed the same. So we are being docked for our goods here. And this extra money is money I will not have to spend on goods for my farm or my family. So a quick relief from these tariffs would be greatly appreciated in rural America, because if the farmers aren't doing good out here, then the rural businesses don't do good. The equipment, it affects equipment dealers, grain bin dealers.
April, thank you very much for calling in and sharing your story with us. And Sean, I feel like kind of the way that Brian was describing the ripple effect from the auto industry, where if car dealers don't do well, then that kind of rebounds to other businesses. Soybeans are another good example of that, because people aren't just buying raw soybeans from the store. Soybeans are used in an array of things, and it affects being able to do business with all kinds of different pieces of the economy.
Right. No, absolutely. So, I mean, this is one of the features that we're all learning in this trade war, is that economics is complicated, that it isn't simply a matter of we're all not just buyers of or sellers of steel, for example, right? We all use a whole series of different products, cars, and my iPhone probably has a little steel in it that's probably going to be hit by tariffs. Brian views the economy from one point of view. He looks at the cost of a roof and he says, hey, you know, look, we can probably absorb this. Times are good. My customers can pay a little bit more. I think we're going to be okay. April looks at it from a very different perspective, right? So if you're April, China has been a great news story over the last 10 years for U.S. farmers. It is now the largest export market for U.S. agriculture, one of the largest export markets. The U.S. sells $14 billion of soybeans a year to China. That's like two-thirds, am I right, Chad? It's like two-thirds of U.S. exports of soybeans to the world. It's huge. It's enormous. And what we've seen since these tariffs have been announced and the Chinese have retaliated is that the soybean prices have collapsed. And they've collapsed at a bad time for U.S. farmers who are seeing other commodity prices collapse and so on. And that's one of the unintended effects. My colleagues at the Wall Street Journal have a fantastic piece today on another unintended consequence. There's now a $2.5 billion mountain of pork in America that's there. And this is one of the unintended consequences of trade. We're not exporting, the U.S. is not exporting as much pork as it used to, and it won't be exporting as much pork as it used to because of the tariffs in China and Mexico and other places. Therefore, you're going to end up with more pork here at home. And what do you do with that pork? That drives down the cost of, you have more supply, that drives down the cost of pork. That'll hit farmers in another way. You're seeing it in cars. You know, the price of steel rising, the price of aluminum rising is already increasing the price of cars. And the big three U.S. automakers are going to release results this week. And one of the big things we're going to be looking for is what they say in terms of the impact of tariffs. But also, if you now apply tariffs of 20-25% on imports of cars and car parts, you're not just hitting Toyota or Mercedes or BMW. You're going to be hitting GM and Ford and so on, all of whom rely on imported parts as well. And that's going to feed into the equation as well.
Although I should say, Chad, and there is another voice we want to add to the conversation, but before we bring her in, I should say part of this, I imagine, is also driven by the fact that China is more of a self-sufficient economy. Like, the Chinese economy has boomed in recent years to have a different emphasis on the world stage where it can become a player in its own right. So you've got what President Trump is doing, but China is also increasingly able to be a player in the world market.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, a lot of the concern that Americans have with how the Chinese system has evolved are legitimate. But I think we overestimate just how much leverage we're going to have in trying to address the problems that China poses on the world stage. And certainly the Trump administration's approach, going at it alone instead of working with key allies like the Europeans or Canada, you know, countries that really have the same kind of concerns with the Chinese system that we have, that's not President Trump's approach here.
Well, there's more than just soybean growers, of course, who are affected. There are also growers of wheat and grain and pork farmers and so on. Let's add another voice to the conversation who can speak to what the agricultural impacts of this tariff war are like. Joining us from Billings, Montana, is Michelle Erickson-Jones. She's a fourth-generation farmer in Broadview, Montana. She's the president of the Montana Grain Growers Association and a member of Farmers for Free Trade, which is an advocacy group. This month, Michelle testified before the House Ways and Means Subcommittee on International Trade, and she joins us now on the line. Michelle, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Can we talk about a couple of the different impacts of the tariffs? First of all, let's back away from some of the agriculture tariffs. This steel and aluminum tariff, you've told us that that's also affecting you and your fellow farmers in a number of ways. Talk about that.
Yeah, I think for our farm in this area, the biggest impact has been the steel and aluminum tariffs. As I said in my testimony in front of the House subcommittee, we were going to buy a grain bin in February, and we had priced it, and the price was 12% higher than an identical bin we had built last year. And while we weighed our options, we let that bid expire. And in the meantime, Section 232 tariffs were enacted, and the second bid was 8% higher than the first bid.
I'm sorry, as the Section 232 tariffs, these are some of the Trump administration tariffs you're referring to?
Yeah, the steel and aluminum Section 232 tariffs.
Okay. You know much more about this than I do. I am not that a steel
tariff.
So it affects the costs of some of the auxiliary expenses that are kind of around the farm.
Yeah, it not only affects the cost of the auxiliary expenses, we actually didn't end up putting up that bin because it was a 20% price increase over the year before. And in doing so, a small construction company didn't get a job, a U.S. bin company didn't get to ship a bin, and in fact, they sourced domestic steel. So a domestic steel supplier didn't get to ship out steel for that order. So and when those type of tariffs impact agriculture, particularly on the input side, it spills throughout our entire supply chain and affects a lot of small businesses throughout the rural economy and across America.
I do want to acknowledge quite a few of you are sending us comments about these ripple effects of tariffs. Kim emailed, I am in the architectural engineering industry. We're seeing 30% increases in construction costs linked to Trump's tariffs, 30%. Projects are being put on hold or scaled way back. Solar panel tariffs are also affecting the renewable energy industry. Costs are up over 35% and jobs are being lost. Construction jobs are being lost. This is not a good trend. Michelle, what about the wheat business? As I understand, China imports about $65 million of wheat just from Montana each year. These retaliatory tariffs have got to be tough on your business.
Yeah, they're definitely impacting China's wheat imports. In fact, China stopped importing wheat in March of this year in preparation for the tariffs being in effect. The tariffs actually were not in effect on wheat when they stopped buying U.S. Wheat. And that definitely has some impacts on our supply and demand, on where we can ship our, export our products to. We're an export-dependent market. 80% or 75% of Montana wheat is exported. China is roughly number six on our, of our top customers. And so without that, you know, that impacts supply and demand, that impacts price, and they'll certainly have some negative effects on the farm economy, on the farm gate price. And for us, we're concerned that we will lose that Chinese market. And they are a growing economy. They are the one of the largest consumers of wheat in the world. And they were a market that we were hoping to take advantage of. The U.S. does have a couple of wheat-related WTO enforcement cases that the Obama administration launched a couple years ago, the Trump administration has been pursuing. But despite all of that, China never stopped importing our wheat until we got up to these tariffs, and a loss of that market would be unfortunate.
Do you see other markets that might be able to take the place of the Chinese market? China's certainly the biggest, but how are you filling the gap? Or have you figured that out yet?
The wheat industry in and of itself obviously is working to develop markets across the world. U.S. Wheat Associates does a substantial amount of work to increase our export markets and to maintain our customers. But total wheat exports for this year are down substantially over last year. U.S. Wheat Associates just put out an article this morning, and I believe we're down 32% for our exports year over year.
Wow.
So that lack of demand for U.S. wheat is really unfortunate. And our price has gone down while the price in Argentina and Australia, two top quality competitors for wheat, their price has increased, but our demand is still down. So that's a concerning development for the wheat industry.
Sean Donnan, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, what we're hearing from Brian and April and Michelle is they're all pointing to some of the long-term consequences here. And so there's a short term sharp shock in terms of the costs that are increased in terms of steel for a 25% tariff being imposed. But then there's also what Michelle was talking about there is that lack of investment, that decision to put something on hold. And we're hearing that over and over again from different companies, different industries. I spent some time talking to the recreational boat industry a few weeks ago, and these are boom times. They should be boom times for the recreational boat industry. You know, you don't buy a boat unless you're feeling good about the economy, right? This is not something you need, although you may tell your wife that it's something you need.
I was about to say, kind of, some people would argue with you about how much they need their boat.
My wife ain't buying it. But the point is that they were thinking about expanding. They were thinking about expanding. You talk to companies that build big aluminum boats, and they were thinking about expanding, building new factories, adding people, and they're just not doing that now because there's a huge amount of uncertainty. Same thing with the auto industry right now. BMW, one of the biggest employers in South Carolina, huge plant in Spartanburg, South Carolina, from which they export SUVs, BMW SUVs, to China and other parts of the world. They're saying, we're going to just put a hold on future investment in South Carolina until we can figure out what's going on with the Trump administration and these tariffs. So the Trump administration is trying to encourage kind of more manufacturing in the United States, but by imposing these tariffs. That's its stated goal. But while it's doing that, it's creating all of these unintended consequences that are having the reverse effect.
Ursatal tweeted, here in Arkansas, our economy will suffer a big blow from tariffs. We have a huge soybean, rice, pork, and other agricultural economy. The majority of Arkansas went for Trump in 2016. Definitely want to talk about the politics of all this when we continue our conversation with Sean Donnan, Chad Bound, Brian DeHeno, and Michelle Erickson-Jones. And then another good basic question. William emailed, what does the government do with the money it collects from these new tariffs? Good question. We'll get you an answer in just a minute. Stay close. Before we get back to our conversation, we would love your help with tomorrow's program about endangered animals. The Endangered Species Act turns 45 this year. It's largely responsible for saving beloved wildlife like the bald eagle and the gray whale. The Trump administration is pushing to overhaul the act in ways that could make it harder for species to make the protected list. Supporters of these changes say the act is too strict, regulating animals that do not need protection anymore, and that it hurts America's economic growth. Should we rethink wildlife conservation? Do you work in an industry that is affected by this law? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. How would deregulating wildlife protection impact where you live or what you do? Tell us your story, 855-236-1A1A. Or you can use our new app, 1A Vox Pop, to quickly send us a radio-quality audio file. You can download 1A Vox Pop, V-O-X-P-O-P, in the App Store, and we'll share some of your stories tomorrow on 1A. Back now to our conversation with Michelle Erickson-Jones, a fourth-generation farmer in Montana, Chad Bound with the Peterson Institute of International Economics, Sean Donnan of the Financial Times, and Brian DeHeno of BCD Construction in Michigan. Chad, you wanted to jump back in.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to Michelle's really good point that I thought that she made about what she was seeing about wheat prices out there in the rest of the world. So, you know, Argentina and Australia going up. And I think that's one of the problems that we face when we try to engage in this unilateral trade war that we're doing all by ourselves, is that there are lots of alternative suppliers out there. So when China stops buying American soybeans, they can turn to soybeans from Brazil instead. Or they stop buying American wheat, they can buy it from, you know, Australia or Argentina or lots of other suppliers. And that's true for a lot of these types of goods. And so I think this is one of the ways in which the Trump administration might have miscalculated just how much trade leverage that we can actually engage in fighting a trade war like this.
Ursatol tweeted, here in Arkansas, our economy will suffer a big blow from tariffs. We have a huge soybean, rice, pork, and other agricultural economy. The majority of Arkansas went for Trump in 2016. Brian DeHeno, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to this comment. A number of critics of the president's tariffs have said that the people who will be hurt the most by this are the people who voted the most stridently and the most passionately for Donald Trump in 2016. How do you see this affecting the politics of the president's future?
Well, the way I kind of look at it, Josh, is, you know, when I was doing some homework last night, I actually looked up Chad Bound's speech about a month ago. I saw it on C-SPAN. And one of the things that he highlighted was state-owned enterprises. The Chinese don't play fair. One of the things they do is they subsidize their state-owned enterprises, be it agriculture, be it steel, be it aluminum. And they use those enterprises to then dump material back into the U.S. and North American markets, if not through China, through other ancillary countries to get around tariffs. And one of the things that we do here in America is we also subsidize our farm industry to the tune of, I believe, about $150 billion a year. I may be wrong on that number. But what I'd like to say is that we need to get behind our country in this trade war. This is not just for now. This is for the future. This is for many decades into the future if we can win this. And one of the ways that maybe I'd ask Chad Bound to maybe comment on this is, how do we counter government actors that are state actors that are trying to manipulate the market? And there is casualties. I am sympathetic to soybean farmers. I am sympathetic to people that are going to take some casualties from this trade war. But I don't think that we've opened up all the tools of the rules of engagement that we might have at our disposal in terms of what can, there's a farm bill currently right now that's going through the Senate and the House. I don't think it's got all the way through yet. The Republicans want to play games with food stamps, unfortunately. But if we can get this through and we could add subsidies to these farmers during the course of this trade war, I think that that could go a long way to say, you have our back, and America, we also have your back as farmers.
Brian, I just want to make sure that I follow where you're going. It seems like, and maybe I'm off base here, and if I am, please say so, but I feel like perhaps you are viewing this differently because you are not a farmer, because you are a service provider as opposed to someone whose livelihood depends season by season on the land and the economy doing well by you. I wonder if maybe you know, as someone who works in roofing and construction, you have a different economic calculus for what victory looks like and for the casualties you can endure than a farmer. I wonder, and Michelle, I'd love you to chime in on this too. I just wonder, Brian, if you don't get what people in agriculture are going through because your economics are really, really different from theirs.
No, I could understand your concern about that, but Josh, I have to be honest. We were on the front lines, even though things are going right now, going pretty good. All right. Times couldn't be better. But about 10 years ago, we were on the front lines of the housing crisis in America. A housing crisis we're actually still going through. We are underbuilding by almost 1 million houses a year. And, you know, so to say that I don't understand the plight of that, you know, 10 years ago, we got absolutely no sympathy from anybody. People looked at us and they said, yeah, that's the builder that built my house like crap. It's falling down now. Now I'm owed all this money. Now I have to give my house back to the bank. And they blamed us. And at the same time, being in Metro Detroit here, we got hit by Hurricane NAFTA all about at the same time. And to say that I don't understand the plight, I have to kind of take issue with that. We had our hard times, but they were for different reasons and at a different point in time. So I think that there's going to be pain to go around, but to win this trade war, to win any war, there is going to be short-term pain. There is no doubt about it. You will take casualties, but we have to be behind our country and understand that this is a cause that is greater than ourselves.
Michelle Erickson-Jones, how do you see the politics of this going forward? I hear where Brian's coming from, and he's right in saying that Detroit went through its economic pain in recent memory. So I can kind of understand where he's coming from. Where are you coming from in terms of what this might mean politically going forward?
Well, I think one thing to make clear is that our farm bill is designed for risk management. It is heavy on crop insurance. It is not designed to protect farmers for this type of economic uncertainty. And another point to make is that China's domestic price supports are blatantly illegal. They far exceed their WTO requirements. It is the exact reason that U.S. Trade Representatives has an enforcement case against their price supports for wheat, corn, and rice. With the USTR, when we originally launched that case, is hoping that that case will be won.
I'm sorry, the USTR, the United States Trade Representative.
Yes.
Robert Lighthizer right now, but yes.
It is Robert Lighthizer right now. The trade enforcement case was originally launched under the Obama administration, but it's been pursued by the Trump administration. Once we won that case, that we would be able to also work on their illegal price supports for other commodities, including cotton. And so the two different price supports are very different. The United States is WTO compliant, and launching an aid package in the farm bill would be incredibly difficult to design because of the various impacts, depending on whether you're a soybean farmer, a cherry farmer, a winery, the impacts vary so much throughout agriculture, and it would also quite possibly be very difficult to make WTO compliant.
So Michelle, I want to make sure I'm following you here in terms of whether or not, as you see it, growers have the political stomach to follow President Trump through this trade war. Do you think that, at least just from where you are, just from your perspective and the growers you know, that they're mostly with him, losing faith? What do you think as of right now?
You know, it's hard to get a sense of what that we actually think. We're supportive of holding China accountable. Mm-hmm. We certainly understand that they have trade distorting practices. We were fully behind launching a WTO case. And political support is difficult to analyze. Farmers, like everyone in this country, are not one single single issue voters. How that plays out will certainly remain to be seen. But what we would really like to see is some resolution to these tariffs, some certainty put back in our market, and to see us pursue trade agreements with other countries, to finalize NAFTA, to pursue bilateral agreements, you know, to open up our markets. Because what farmers want is increased market access, increased trade opportunities,
right,
and not to see aid come out of the farm bill or from a different disaster package.
There's a bit more I want to get to before our time is up, but let me let Sean jump in right quick.
I just want to jump in with a very quick point, and that is that we often think of Donald Trump as a new voice, as something very different, but actually just listening to Michelle and Brian talk about there, we're actually, this is a divide in the U.S. economy that has existed almost since the creation of the U.S. In the 19th century, in the 1830s, I believe, the big debate on trade was over something called the Tariffs of Obama. The Tariffs of Abomination, wonderful name, were opposed by the agrarian South and pushed for by the manufacturers in the North to keep out imported manufactured goods. And it led to a huge divide in to some of the initial threats of secession from South Carolina.
May 1828. So it's been 190 years.
Exactly. And so, and this is, you know, and Donald Trump has I'm doing my best to remember my history, but Donald Trump is often talked about as his admiring Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson is actually the president who overturned the Tariffs of Obama to try and save the union.
Let me get to a few more things before our time is up. Chad, particularly auto tariffs, some of the ones that have been put in place and some that have been proposed. Last Thursday, the Commerce Department had a hearing about this. Jennifer Thomas is with the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, which is a trade group that represents Ford, GM, Toyota, and other global automakers. She spoke out against the proposed auto tariffs. Here's part of what she said.
Our analyses show that a 25% tariff will increase the price of an imported car nearly $6,000 and the price of a U.S.-made car $2,000. This would equate to an $83 billion tax on consumers, and that would trigger a domino effect throughout the industry and the economy. Because when vehicle prices rise, demand drops. Lower demand means less production, and when production declines, job losses follow. A Peterson Institute analysis projects a job loss of 200,000. And if other countries retaliate, they estimate American job losses to exceed 600,000. That's about 10% of this country's auto jobs.
It's Jennifer Thomas of the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers speaking last Thursday at a Commerce Department hearing. China hiked its tariff on U.S. cars to 40% in response to President Trump's tariffs on Chinese goods. Chad, I feel like the auto tariffs is a turning point. I feel like there's a lot of energy where when it reached the point of the auto industry around the world, you could feel people go, whoa. Stop. Hey, wait, cut it out. Like, we have to do this a different way.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, what's really quite striking about this particular set of proposed tariffs is even the industry doesn't want these things, right? So normally you would have the ones who would benefit from the protection, not having to compete with imports, being the ones to step forward and ask for the tariffs. But here, basically all the automakers have said, no, we don't want these things. And the reason why is they're worried about their costs going up because they're, you know, in global supply chains. They're talking about not just hitting final cars, but also the inputs as well. And they're very, very worried about retaliation. So as you mentioned, China retaliated. There have been other countries that have been retaliated over motorcycles, the Harley Davidson story of about a month ago, where they've actually had to move production outside of the United States if they want to continue to build and sell motorcycles for the European market. This is what the auto industry is really worried about, that they're going to suffer a loss of competitiveness by making automobiles in the U.S. market, and they're going to have to lay off workers. And I think that's what my colleagues at the Peterson Institute found in their recent study.
Chad, I'd love you to answer that question from William, which a lot of people also asked. William emailed, what does the government do with the money it collects from these new tariffs?
It generally goes into the regular coffers, and so the government can use it to, you know, build roads and bridges and all the other things that the government spends money on. But I think that, and President Trump has tweeted about this, so he's tried to make this point before. But I think as an economist, this is very worrying. We moved away from a system in the United States, at least, of using tariffs to collect revenue, you know, over 100 years ago. And the reason why is because it's a very inefficient way. It screws up a lot of decisions in the economy that consumers make, that companies have to make. And there's just better ways of collecting the tax revenue that governments need to, you know, provide the public services for us all than doing it through import tariffs.
Speaking of decisions that consumers make, one of our listeners asked that very thing about what this means for her as a consumer. Here is the note she sent us through our app, 1A Vox Pop.
This is Nancy from the Treasure Coast in Florida. I'm not a business owner or an employee that's affected by the tariffs, but I am a U.S. taxpayer and citizen who will be affected by the tariffs. Trump has promised that this tax plan that he passed was going to save me money and put more money back in my pocket, more disposable income. Well, I don't see how that's going to happen now that I'm going to have to be paying higher prices for products because tariffs have been increased and businesses have to recoup their costs.
Nancy, we appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much. I wonder if maybe we go to Brian and Michelle to speak to the consumers out there, the people who you're trying to do business with. What would you say to them in terms of the future of doing business with you through the lens of these tariffs? Is it going to be harder for them to do business with you? Easier? About the same? Brian, let me start with you briefly before we go.
You know, I'd say it's, I think it's going to work itself out. You know, for years sitting here in Detroit, I watched for years and years and years as friends, family, neighbors. They had to go and train their replacements down in Mexico, and they'd be gone for weeks at a time away from their family. And, you know, about a year later, they get fired and they lose their house, and then they'd have to move in with their kids. And, you know, they'd only get about half the pension they were promised after 30 years of service. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really going to work itself out. I mean, for years here, I saw that happen for years, the social construct that it decimated here. I don't know if we're ever going to actually get that back. So, you know, at least from what I can speak to, from people here in the Detroit area, are they going to be that worried about prices going up at Walmart? You know, after what they've been through the last 15 years or so, I really just don't think they're all that worried about it.
Let me give Michelle a chance to chime in very quickly before we're out of time. Michelle?
I definitely think for the U.S. consumer, we're lucky in this country that our groceries are fairly cheap, and certainly U.S. farmers will continue to supply that, and we'll continue to work to supply the global market what they need wherever we can and through whatever whatever trade agreements we can make, and however we can get our products to the global market, we pride ourselves in providing a lot of quality and a lot of goods to consumers worldwide.
Michelle Erickson Jones, fourth generation farmer. Brian DeHenno, president of BCD Construction. Chad Bown of the Peterson Institute of International Economics. And Sean Donna of the Financial Times. Thank you all for being with us. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.